going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, this is another edition of the Going Deep podcast. And on this edition, we go deep on all things LeBron James through the eyes of Joe Vardon, senior NBA writer, but also the mind behind A King's Reign. It is a multi-part series on LeBron James with audio storytelling from Joe Vardon himself, and as well as his athletic colleagues going through LeBron James's rise from a high school phenom to arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. Talking to people who knew him, people who helped raise him, people who coached him. My favorite episode thus far is the one with Eric Spoelstra, where he breaks down the beautiful mind that is LeBron James. But where did this concept come from? And how did Joe Vardon manage to sneak this in before he headed to the Philippines to cover a team LeBron is not on, USA Basketball, which he's doing throughout the rest of the summer as he will be reporting on the FIBA World Championships. We will catch up with him hopefully in the future as Canada looks to qualify to the Olympics via the World Championships. But now it's all about the GOAT qualifications of LeBron James and the audio storytelling masterpiece that is King's Reign. Let's go deep and listen to and learn from Joe Vardon.
So, Joe, take me back to the beginning of this project, the thought of taking on a narrative podcast about LeBron's life and career and legacy and do it now specifically. What's the genesis behind why The Athletic tackled the subject matter?
Well, I think there were a few different dynamics at play here. One is LeBron. I mean, he was entering his 20th year, which is rare. I think the average NBA career is something like 4 years, something like that. So he's entering his 20th year at the time. This was, you know, early last season. And then he was going to become the NBA's all-time leading scorer. So right there, you have two news hooks that are compelling to want to dive into his career in depth like we were able to do. The second thing is just from a business standpoint, The Athletic has done pretty well with these kinds of projects. We've done one with Andrew Luck and a podcast explaining why he quit football at the age that he did. Since then, I think a week before we launched this King's Reign, our football team did another one on signal callers, play callers in the NFL. So offensive coordinators, which is pretty cool. And so, you know, and I guess the third thing combining these two is it's something that The Athletic does well. We have the talent and the resources to do it. And then with a figure like LeBron, who has been such a dominant force in the NBA and in pop culture for really the entire 20 years of his career, I don't know how much more can be written about this guy. I think every kind of story that you could write has been written. And so how do you tell a story about him in a different way? And this idea of a documentary podcast was the way to do it. Like, we were able to reach out and find so many willing partners, people who have been close to him throughout his whole life, whether as a childhood friend or coaches or former teammates, all who have witnessed the things that we know he did, but in their proximity to him and at that point in time in his life, were able to see things that maybe don't come across in written stories or written reports, something that is much easier to tell if you're sitting down face to face and just talking about it. And so with all those things put together, we were able to come up with A King's Reign and build out a number of episodes that we're very proud of.
it's not often when you're going through a project like this and you're endeavoring to do this level of storytelling that you have access to people who have covered that athlete literally from the beginning. When you looked at LeBron's career in high school to obviously the NBA and how not only he has changed, but how sport has changed, how our jobs have changed, what stands out to you about that longevity in the person and the player that you've been documenting for so long?
Oh, well, I mean, there are, you know, it's a different world, obviously. And I mean, he has been a constant, as I said, like he's been a constant as a face of the NBA and a force in just popular culture and part of the general public discussion as the world has changed around us. I mean, as far as, and I can make this personal too, you know, LeBron and I were born in the same hospital in Akron, Ohio. I'm 4 years older than him. And we grew up in totally different socioeconomic situations. But after I was born, you know, my first 7 years, I lived in a neighborhood in Akron proper. And he, when he was born, one of the first places he and his mother lived was with her, either mother or grandmother, I think grandmother. And she lived on the street that my family lived on. So there was actually a time where LeBron and I as children lived on the same street. And then we moved to the suburbs and, you know, I lived a very, you know, a fortunate childhood, you know, with, you know, access to everything. And then he grew up the way he did, which is pretty much the polar opposite. But then he becomes a teenager and he gets into St. Vincent, St. Mary's. And I'm working in, for the Akron Beacon Journal in college, well, while I'm in college as a part-timer. And so I had the opportunity to cover some of his games. And so I remember, you know, he was just becoming a star at that time and the Sports Illustrated cover was coming and the games had moved from St. Vincent St. Mary's gym to the University of Akron. And you know, there were times where like Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant would come to his games when the Lakers were in town. And I was there for that as a reporter who was just learning and didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about how to do the job and what all this would be like. And I just, you know, remember being at those games and writing those stories. And then he becomes this global sensation. And he is, you know, he's the number one pick in the draft and the Cavaliers earn the right to get him. And this place where we both grew up that had been, you know, such a hard luck sports community for both of our entire lives, it was all about the change. And at that point, I was working for a chain of small newspapers in Northeast Ohio now as a full timer and is the only person assigned to covering these Cleveland sports. So, you know, I was actually there with him at the beginning. And, you know, it wasn't like, you know, in those days you had a traveling beat writer from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and a traveling beat writer from the Akron Beacon Journal and then actually from a third paper and maybe even a fourth. And that wasn't me. I wasn't able to travel in those days because of where I worked most of the time. So I don't know that he remembers that I was there at the beginning, but I was. I was there on draft night. I was there for his first ever game and for all the home games those first couple years, even a couple of the road ones. And then as our lives sort of, you know, go down their different paths, like I start to get better jobs and move out of Cleveland to go to larger newspapers and he gets the Cavs to the finals and then has those couple near misses the couple years after. And then he leaves for Miami. And then, you know, 4 years later, at the same time, I was ready. At this point, I was covering politics in Columbus at the Columbus Dispatch, which was a swing state in the country as far as presidential elections were concerned. had been through that and had, was tired of it and wanted to get back into sports. And I had just had a regular interview lined up at the Cleveland Plain Dealer because their Cavaliers writer had retired. They didn't have one, but so what? You know, the Cavs had stunk for years and waning in interest. And so there was an interview that we had set up. In July of 2014. And 5 days before I was supposed to interview there, LeBron announces that he's coming back to Cleveland. And our lives kind of collide again. And now what happens is he's coming back with all the fame and all the notoriety. And I become one of the first and only sports writers in American journalism history to be hired to cover a singular athlete in a team sport. But that was the job. I was hired by the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com not to cover the Cavs, but to cover him. And so, you know, our lives we were parallel from that point over the next 4 or 5 years. You know, I covered him every step of the way, all four of those finals as he, and then of course the 2016 championship. After that championship year, my partner on that beat, on the Cavs team coverage, as we said in those days, Chris Haynes had moved on. And so I just took over as general Cavs writer, and we didn't have another LeBron guy. So we stayed together. And then when he left for the Lakers, the Athletic hired me with the idea of as long as I could prove that I could still do it, but just on a bigger scale, like write these LeBron stories, like they quickly promoted me to national writer. And here we are. So I don't know if you were looking for a personal answer there, but when you, that's kind of the way it hit me, your question. It's just that in ways that were tangential and then ways that were very personal, LeBron and I have, our lives and our careers have sort of weaved in and out of contact over the better part of almost four decades now. And this podcast is just the latest thing.
That's true for other journalists as well. It's not unique to you in some form. I love the fact, though, that you covered politics, because at some point there was a switch, at least a public-facing switch, where LeBron went from apolitical to somewhat political, or at least social rights forward-thinking. What do you make of that transition, and why do you think it occurred?
Well, it goes back to 2012 with the Trayvon Martin, whatever word you use for what happened. Tragedy is certainly one of 2012, and the Miami Heat as a team, it's something that they wanted to protest and they wanted to take action on. And so they came out as a team posing in black hoodies pulled over their heads to signify like what Trayvon Martin was wearing the day that, that he was killed. And that wasn't LeBron's idea to do that. It was actually Ray Allen's. But LeBron was already the face of the league at that point, and certainly the face of the Heat. And so he was, the fact that he was involved in this, that kind of, it elevated the entire ordeal. And as you know, in the United States, things didn't get better after that. It got worse. And the same type of thing was happening over and over again, and each one was very public, and as LeBron continued to grow in stature and sort of realized responsibility isn't quite the right word, but he felt a responsibility in the position that he was in the social sphere. To continue to lend his voice to sort of these causes. And so he gets back to Cleveland in 2014, and this is happening. You know, there's an incident in Missouri, there's an incident in New York, and he leads these protests and he speaks out about them. And he, at the same time, he had changed the mission of his charitable organization to address basically reading rates among, you know, kids that grew up like he did in Akron, which turned into him creating a school for kids who are at risk of not graduating. And all of that is a form of activism. And just so basically to answer your question, it's like this one thing happened in 2012. He realized sort of his place in the world when it comes to social justice and the impact that he could have. He certainly idolized Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Jim Brown and you know, sort of the lions from the 1960s in terms of athletes as freedom fighters. And he's the next one. He's the bridge. And he recognized that in 2012 and 13 and 14. And then when the opportunities began to arise after that, he took it and ran with it. And he is certainly the next great athlete to take up those causes the way that they did it in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
To me, the most remarkable thing about his career and story is, given how young he was, given the era that we're in, given how long he's been a public figure, it is largely without scandal. I remember when I was around the same age as him in high school, the big scandal was the fact that he had a Hummer in high school. Like, that was a big deal that led SportsCenter. But between the decision, which I think people forget, he raised a lot of money for charity and he got, you know, free time on ESPN, which a lot of people would have taken. And between some people, you know, in more recent years being not happy with his response to Daryl Morey in relation to what was going on in China, by and large, he has not really put a foot wrong publicly. How do you put that in context, given the fact that he really had to learn it, he and his friends that have been around him had to learn it on the fly?
Well, I think I would want to start out by saying that there is a difference between, I think, your overall point, which I agree with everything that you've said, I think, and you put it very well. But there's a difference between your overall point of him not making a mistake or very few mistakes, despite being in the public light as long as he has, with the couple of things that you mentioned that he was criticized for, especially the last one, with the Daryl Morey and the China stuff. And the point I want to make is, when you wade as deeply into politics as LeBron has, you open yourself up to a level of criticism that most athletes just don't face because they don't get involved that way. Like, when you get into the political sphere, 47 to 51% of the country are going to disagree with what you said. And in LeBron's case, like, he has been very outward as a supporter of the Democratic ticket. He campaigned for both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. He has been highly critical of Donald Trump. And so that just opens him to a whole side of people who are just waiting to pounce on something. And so we get this China situation in 2019. Morey sends out this tweet in support of Hong Kong protesters. And what people forget is that the tweet was sent while LeBron was on a plane with the Los Angeles Lakers headed to Shanghai. They were on their way to China. They're just going there to play basketball. They have no idea that Daryl has this on his mind. But once that tweet is sent and the Chinese government sees it and they become upset, through no fault of their own, the Lakers and the Nets are now trapped, basically, in the team hotel in China for a week. They can't go out, and most of their events are canceled. And there was talk of even canceling the exhibition games. And so LeBron was in the middle of all this, and he gets home, and it's the Lakers' first day back, their first game back at then Staples Center since all this happened. And he gets asked about Morey. And he says some things that sound not only critical of Daryl, but seemed to be like, you know, like it's almost, it was almost like an admonishment for applying what seemed to be, you know, American values to a political situation somewhere else in the world. And so now, you know, you have an entire section of people on one side of the political aisle who see this as, yes, finally LeBron has made a mistake. We are going to jump all over him for it. And that is exactly what happened. But then what was also strange is there were a smaller segment of people, but still a segment, who would otherwise agree with LeBron politically, but were highly turned off by what he said because it seemed to be sort of running against the current of like human rights, which is what the Hong Kong situation was, as far as Daryl was concerned. And so that kind of got him in trouble on both sides. The only other part I would add for LeBron in that particular point would be he had significant business interests in China, as did the NBA. And the NBA lost, you know, I mean, they had $1 billion+ at stake in China at the time, and they lost half of it over this whole thing. And LeBron not only sells a lot of shoes in China, but he had a movie coming out that he had staked a lot to, and a lot of it was contingent upon it being able to show in movie theaters in China, where he's a big star. And so he had his own business interests. He wouldn't be the first one to be thinking about his business interests in something like this. So it turned out to be a messy situation for sure. A blip on an otherwise pretty good, you know, record is of activism, as we know. But I just wanted to explain the context of it. The bigger question that you asked, just about like overall avoiding this, you know, because I went so long on the first answer, I would just say that there has been no one like him. Who's been able to navigate being as a star as big as this in the age of social media and being able to avoid the pitfalls that get to a lot of these athletes. He's just been stellar about it. He has surrounded himself with the right people, maybe since high school, maybe like the Hummer situation and the ways he got himself in trouble then taught him a lesson. I believe that Nike helped him early on, helped him understand the value of having the right people around him. And he's been brilliant and a role model for any NBA player that wants to follow in the footsteps of being a star in this day and age.
What's his relationship with Cleveland, or I suppose I should say what Cleveland's relationship with him? He makes a point to say he is from Akron. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was a star at his level early in my career and a team refused to trade J.J. Hickson to get me help, I think I would have been out of there at that point. I certainly know for a fact that if, you know, Daniel Snyder wrote a you know, dismissive letter about me, I would never play for that franchise again. Yet when he was in Miami, I remember that I was like everybody else trying to track where Daniel Snyder's plane was, with him going back to Cleveland. What is his relationship like with the organization, the city, and that those chapters of his life?
Well, I think that he is forever cemented as the greatest athlete that Cleveland has ever been able to call its own. And that I think the hard feelings of the decision are almost entirely forgotten, and very few hard feelings over his going to the Lakers because of what he did and what he gave when he came back. You know, it wasn't just winning in 2016, although that would be enough, I think, in the minds of a lot of people, but it was those 4 years he gave everything that he had, and made sure that this organization went to four consecutive finals, including that last year when they weren't very good. They were not a very good team. And he was upset with some of the roster decisions that had been made, and also had, you know, an eye and a half on LA already. And it would have been easy for him, with his legacy already cemented, to just kind of accept the fate of a team that was going to fall short. But he didn't do that, and he gave Cleveland yet one more spring and summer of memories in that improbable run to the finals in 2018. So I think that, I think you consider what he's done in the city of Akron with that school. I think those are the things that largely erase any of the previous bad feelings. You know, you mentioned his relationship with Dan Gilbert, and it is complicated, and there were hard feelings that remained after LeBron agreed to come back. LeBron was constantly, you know, not trusting of Dan and Dan's motives when he returned, and the way that LeBron did his contracts here in Cleveland for the first two seasons, basically just taking one-year deals, was done specifically to apply pressure on a front office because of Dan Gilbert that he just did not trust. And so I think now, you know, I mean, Dan obviously has had some very serious health problems. And I don't know, I think the two men would be grateful to each other for what they were able to accomplish together. I think that would be about the extent of it. But LeBron, the place that LeBron has in his heart for Cleveland and the Cavaliers now is big, and it's soft, and there's always affection. You know, I remember when the All-Star game was here, I guess it was in 22, he got just a rousing, ridiculous standing ovation multiple times from the fans here, and he still gets it when the Lakers come back and they still stop the game and they still show highlight videos commemorating his time, which when they did that this season, I actually thought it was outside sort of the realm where that's okay. Like, it's not necessary anymore. And they still do it because of the mutual admiration that exists between organization and fans and this one player.
You mentioned the 1 year contracts and him being the modern day father of the player empowerment era, where you are smart about what you do, you use your leverage as an athlete. And now I almost wonder if the pendulum has swung maybe too far, even though generally I'm in lockstep with players because I too am an employee, not an employer. The influence that he had on other players to understand what the cap was doing, to understand their value. How intentional do you think he was around spreading that gospel to the other players at this time?
Well, I don't think he got into the business of whether it was empowering a friend to become the super agent that he is in Rich Paul, or in wielding power over the Cavs the way that he did for his entire second tenure here. I don't think he did all that so that other players would follow. But I think they quickly knew that they were setting the template for how you do this. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that he has always surrounded himself with the right people. I mean, you look at him and you look at his friends and what they have done with the opportunities that he has presented them. They have taken them and run. You know, Rich Paul is shrewd and he's smart, you know, and he deserves a lot of credit for helping craft the strategy that LeBron was able to employ and that so many players have followed since, including others of Rich's clients who are not LeBron. You look at Maverick Carter and what he's done. You know, he was supposed to be the overseer of all LeBron's various business ventures, but he ended up really focusing on the Hollywood component. And Maverick is a legitimate player in media, no doubt. And that is on their own, you know. So LeBron has set this template. He, as you mentioned, he is the founding father of the player empowerment movement. but it's the people around him who has sort of helped pave the way for this. You know, there are other players now who have huge business ventures, and people who work with them who take advantage of these opportunities, you know, but it all started with LeBron and sort of, you know, you could say, well, wait a minute, Michael Jordan and Nike and everything that happened there. And that's true. But Michael did not empower others and did not, what other players were not able to sort of, you know, copy and sort of follow in the way that they have been able to follow what LeBron has done. He's the one who more kind of created and set a blueprint for the way others have been able to do it.
You mentioned his friends. I loved listening to the series of Coach K calling LeBron his friend and waxing poetic about how smart LeBron is. This is someone who is on the campus of Duke for most of his adult life, talking to people who all by definition are smart, and he finds LeBron so smart. But two people who, outside of basketball, you'd never find them, you know, in the same circles, unless they were maybe at Michael Rubin's party. But it was a real interesting thing you did in this series of having these pinnacle people in LeBron's life give you their perspective on him. Is there one story, one anecdote, one thing you learned from one of those people in the series that really reframed how you thought about LeBron?
No, there is not. There is not anything that I heard that reframed the way I thought of him because of how much time I've spent learning about him. I will tell you that there is an episode that has not come out as far in terms of or in related to our conversation. It hasn't aired yet. Where Channing Frye shares a story of the 2016 title run that I didn't know. And there have been books written about this team, that team. And I was there for every step of the way and still talked to everybody that was involved in it. And I didn't know this. And so that was one of my favorite parts of the series. But hearing someone like Coach K, a legend, speak with the reverence and respect of LeBron and sort of the admiration of the same things that I always, you know, admired in LeBron. And I'm not special. I'm not a legend. But if I saw these things in my workings with LeBron, and then somebody like Coach K saw so many of the same things about his intelligence and his perception, his ability to adapt, you know, his sort of what makes him tick. The fact that Coach K saw those things was a really gratifying moment for me. And certainly, and to just, I mean, I don't mind telling your listeners, it was one of the best and most favored interviews of my career. And I've been doing this 20 plus years. It was just, that was a remarkable sit down. And I'm glad that you enjoyed it because I know I did. And I hope other listeners did as well.
Lastly, on LeBron, what's his legacy? You know, he's often compared to Jordan. And I think if you ask, you know, anyone walking down the street, what's Jordan's legacy? I think we all know what they're probably going to talk about. It's, you know, game-winning shot versus Utah, his ownership and how that went well financially, not well on the court, you know, his shoes and the brand. I think if you ask, you know, 10 people about LeBron and his legacy, I think you might get 10 different answers. For you, what's the legacy? What's the one thing about him that sticks out to you?
Well, there are many things that stick out to me, but I think the legacy is right now is that he is arguably the greatest ever. If you're the second best player ever, then you are arguably the greatest ever. There's an argument to be made that you are. And, you know, we did at The Athletic the last couple of years, we've done player polls, and in the last one that we did, when we asked who is the greatest player of all time, 37% of active players said LeBron. That number is way up from the first time we asked that question. So as he continues to sort of put these finishing touches on his career, and as his school continues to grow, and as like sort of his business footprint expands, you know, he's already the all-time leading scorer. He's going to finish as the third all-time guy in assists, I think, second or third. You know, he's got four titles now. A fifth is certainly not out of the question. As these things continue to happen, the case will make itself that he, whether or not he is better than Michael, that he had the best career ever, all things considered. Regular season, playoffs, postseason, off the floor, social justice, how he carried himself in the face of social media, all those things. I think you added up, and to me, he's had the greatest career ever. I know I'm still in the minority on that, but as time goes on, I think that there will be a stronger argument for it, and that is his legacy. It's literally that high. Arguably the greatest ever.
Before I let you go, I want to get your perspective on one more thing, because in Canada, our audience, it's Canadian basketball fans. There's two things that they constantly do and want. It's one, to stress and fret about the current state of the Raptors, and two, to find out what Americans think about the current state of the Raptors. So I'll ask you, because right now they have more optimism over the Canadian national basketball team than they do the only team in the nation professionally, the Raptors. Well, what do you make of their offseason and you know, upcoming season outlook and how they got to the place they're in post their championship in 2019?
Well, one of my jobs at The Athletic is I am our I cover all the international tournaments. So I will be on the ground in the Philippines this summer for the World Cup. Primarily covering Team USA, of course. However, I think Team Canada is loaded, and I think you guys are going to love Jordy Fernandez. He's got not 1 ounce of Canadian in him, but that's all right. He's a great choice to coach that team. But Nick Nurse was a great choice, and that split was caused by, of course, his departure from the Raptors, and I think that's where we get into this discussion. The Raptors had a window. They made the most of it. They won. They went all in with Kawhi, and they won it. I praise them for that. They had horrendous luck the next 2 years that sort of cost them a chance for anything better, and I thought they performed above where they should have, considering who they lost and Kawhi Leonard departing. But it feels like they are slipping in towards a rebuild. And I guess the way that you consider the alternative is just Masai is somebody whose stars gravitate towards. He's not afraid to take a big swing. So you think the Raptors are kind of headed towards a rebuild. You wonder how long, you know, Van Vliet's gone. You wonder who's next. They didn't trade any other pieces yet, big time pieces, I mean. But, you know, I never discount what Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, like what they have up their sleeve. So I don't think of the Raptors right now as an Eastern Conference favorite in a very tough conference. I don't have like high hopes for them right now, but I just refuse to discount their front office. So new coach, sad to see the Nurse era end there, but it was a great time. And you know, we'll see what's next.
We'll definitely see what's next with King's reign. Enjoy hopefully some downtime in what is a bit of a quieter stretch in the basketball world before you get to the World Championships. And hopefully if Canada does well, we'll bother you to break that down as well. Thank you so much, Joe.
I'd be happy to do that. Thank you.
Thanks so much to Joe Vardin. You can find him on Twitter at Joe Vardin. You can find The King's Reign via The Athletic or via their podcast stream, The Athletic NBA Show. So be sure to subscribe to that if you aren't already, and be sure if you aren't already to subscribe to this. We appreciate a like, a favorite, a share, 5 stars, and a comment. We hopefully will be catching up with Joe Vardin, as I mentioned, as he's covering Team USA and the FIBA World Championships at large. We definitely will be catching up with those covering Team Canada as they look to punch their ticket to Paris in 2024. But lots of important basketball to be played in 2023. Thank you so much for listening. On behalf of Show, who once again did an amazing job producing. I'm Donovan Bennett. Take care.